Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing Grace.
Today we are entering the final section of 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Which is verses 36 through 40. The entire chapter deals in one way or another with the subject of marriage, although there have been some principles that are greater than simply the subject of marriage, but they were all given in the context of questions about marriage, and they all relate to that, even when in some cases they are applicable beyond that as well. And a lot of different things have been talked about in this chapter. Paul has been answering the questions that came to him from the Corinthian church, and he has dealt with a lot of different subjects, but at some point he has to bring it to a conclusion, and that point is now. And so he has answered questions already, like who should get married, who should remain single, how should husbands and wives relate to one another within marriage? Why marriage is important? Why marriage is not all important? But now we come to the final word, a God-honoring approach to marriage, which basically divides into two parts. Number one, the final word about virgins in verses 36 through 38, and number two, the final word about marriage in verses 39 and 40. So that's where we're going on this Wednesday, October 27. If you are listening today, that's what you can expect to hear us discussing. Thank you for joining us, and many thanks to those whose financial gifts keep us teaching God's Word on this station. First of all, the final word about virgins. He said several things about virgins and about single people, unmarried people prior to this, but the final word begins in verse 36, but if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin. Let them marry. Nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. Ho, 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 ho. Now that's an interesting situation for sure. So let's take a look at it. Now, first of all, consider the background. Questions about marriage were raised at the beginning of the chapter. Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me, it is good for a man not to touch a woman, etc. Several questions relating to marriage were forwarded to Paul, and questions concerning virgins in particular were addressed beginning in verse 25 and continued on and do continue on through verse 28, which is, or 38 rather, which is the section we're looking at today. And the general question is, should virgins get married? And the answer is, maybe. And by the way, this does not mean just young women. because Paul makes it clear in verses 26 and 27 that the same answer applies to men who are unmarried as applies to young women who are unmarried. And so he makes it clear that he has no command from the Lord regarding this question about whether young women, young unmarried women, or young unmarried men should or should not get married, but he offers his own advice, his own opinion. And he makes it clear that it is no sin to marry. And in verse 28, it is the virgin's decision whether or not to get married. But he adds to that that in his opinion, it's wiser to remain single. There's less trouble when you remain single. And he talks in terms of the present distress in verse 26 and trouble in the flesh in verse 28 and to be without care in verse 32. There is this veiled reference to special circumstances, the present distress that wouldn't apply to all Christians in all places at all times. That was a special concern, a special situation that was going on in the Church of Corinth at that time. But now he comes back to take up his advice once again, and these verses we're looking at now and the ones I just read a moment ago, which seems a bit repetitious unless he is answering a different question. And let me work through that for a moment. Going back to verse 25, I need to do this so you can see the contrast. He said, "Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy. I suppose, therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is." That's kind of a surprising statement because he brought up the word virgin in verse 25, and we have in our mind this picture of a young unmarried woman. And then suddenly, in answering the question of verse 26, he says, it is good for a man to remain as he is. So, again, that makes it clear. In that particular case, he's not talking simply about young unmarried women. He's talking about unmarried men and women, unmarried people. But now, he has a little bit different perspective, and what is that? Verse 36, "And this I say," or verse 34, wait a minute, I have to pick it up where we are here. Verse 36, "But if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin," if anyone thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, now he's talking about a father or a mother, a parent, a guardian. In some cases, these virgins, now he's clearly talking about young unmarried women, would have a guardian. Their parents, their father or parents would not still be living. He could even be talking about a fiancé, someone who is betrothed to one of these women. Now, most people take it to be fathers that he's talking to. That is certainly the traditional view. But it could be other things. There are a fair number of commentators who think he's talking to engaged couples or betrothed couples. And I know one commentator who thinks he's talking to fathers in regard to a vow they made to the Lord in regard to their little girl when she was a child. And the question is, now should he keep it now that she's grown up and wants to get married? Is he bound to keep that vow that he made when she was a child? That's some background for what's going on here. This is a different situation than what we saw earlier in verses 25 and following. And keep in mind the cultural setting in which all of this appears. This was a day when most marriages were arranged, both in the Jewish culture and in the Roman culture. Although, from what I have read, that was already beginning to change in the first century, so it was a time of transition. We see a lot of changes in American culture in our day. Some things are changing so rapidly, it almost makes your head spin. It's hard to keep up with what is the current cultural norm. And really nobody knows, because it depends on who you're talking to and what they consider it to be. You talk to somebody else and they consider it to be something else. But there had been a long history of arranged marriages throughout the Roman Empire in general. We find this rather strange to us today, and even in some ways offensive. You're going to arrange a marriage for your child? How bizarre is that? How old-fashioned is that? How offensive is that to do that for your children, to arrange marriages for them rather than letting them choose? But there are a lot of things that could be said, and I don't want to spend the whole broadcast or several broadcasts talking about that one issue, but I would just insert this at this point. Consider the track record of arranged marriages compared to what's going on in our totally unarranged marriages today. The option of letting people decide who they would marry, which we all prefer. I'm glad I had that privilege. I'm so thankful that I did. But what I'm saying is, when you consider the incredibly high divorce rate that we have in America today among the marriages of people where they chose for themselves, nobody forced them into the marriage, nobody arranged it for them, nobody tried to choose a mate for them that they didn't want, they selected a marriage partner that they were attracted to, that they wanted to marry, that they wanted to commit themselves to, that they made a pledge in most cases, unless it was a very modern marriage ceremony where they didn't make this pledge, but in most cases made a pledge to remain married to that person until death should part them. And what is the rate of divorce today? How successful is this modern-day custom of choosing your own mate? Is it really wiser than the old-fashioned idea of arranged marriages? Is it really so bad to think in terms of the older, wiser parents getting together and saying, I think your daughter would be a good partner for my son. What do you think? And work that out between the parents. I know that that's so offensive in a culture where everybody believes that they ought to do whatever they want to do, and nobody else should have anything to say about it whatsoever, but I'm just saying, look at the track record. But Paul is dealing with that background where arranged marriages had been the norm for centuries, and he is giving his advice from that viewpoint. He's assuming, in answering this question, that he's answering a question that relates to that tradition. If a man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes, he does not sin, let them marry. There seems to be the hint there in that last statement that his virgin wants to get married. She has somebody in mind that she wants to marry. She has a suitor. She has a boyfriend. She has someone who wants to marry her, who wants her hand in marriage, is the old-fashioned way of putting it. And the father is saying, I'm not so sure. Hold up. Should we do this? And asking for advice from Paul, and said, maybe you should go ahead and let them get married. Well, we'll take it up again tomorrow. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you his eternal peace.